We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is so great to be back with you here on the American Family Radio Network. I always, you know, vacations or days off or sometimes, and I wasn't actually on vacation the last couple of days. It was just some business that I had to take care of, you know, things that inevitably come up in life. But whenever, whether it's vacation, business, whatever, I always miss this show, and I always miss being able to get up in the morning and talk about truth and the things of God and everything going on in the world, and especially our civil government. And so it's so great to be back, and I'm really excited for our show today as well as tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to have a really amazing guest from Redeemer Bible Church in Arizona, which because of the business that I had to do this past week, I actually got to go and spend some time with some friends over the weekend that are from Grace Community Church out in California with Pastor John MacArthur that I got to know really well through representing Grace Church and Pastor John through all of that COVID shutdown, and you all know the story about that and the documentary, The Essential Church. And so got to stay with some friends who she was actually one of the producers of the film, and then also Daryl Harrison, who a lot of you know, you may follow him on social media, who now, and I may be getting his title wrong, we'll have to ask him tomorrow, but the director of counseling ministers. He is one of the biblical counselors at Redeemer Bible Church, and so came from California and is now in Arizona, in Gilbert, Arizona, at Redeemer Bible Church. So I got to attend that church with my friends, with Daryl, his wife Melissa, and then Arlenny's and Richard, some just great friends who opened their home, and it was so great to be around God's people. And the message on Sunday could not have been more on point in terms of speaking directly, I think, to what a lot of us, not just me, and going through, you know, a lot of this post-Trump fallout. And I so appreciate all of you who have been praying for me and who continue to send me encouraging notes and telling me that you're praying for me through all of this. But what we're all going through various trials, whether it's literal or whether it's just a difficulty or a metaphorical trial. And the topic of the sermon on Sunday was in Daniel 6, which of course is the historical story. And so we don't like to say Bible story, in that this isn't a novel, it's not a fairy tale, it's not just something like the 1001 Arabian Nights that are just moralistic stories or Aesop's fables, right? These are things that literally took place, and the Bible is full of history of God's movements throughout history through his people and showing himself for who he is, the person of truth, and his character. And often, and if you're like me and you grew up in a church, then, you know, we're very familiar with this story. And sometimes we kind of reduce it, I think, to the felt board kind of story. If any of you remember the really old school, and I'm totally dating myself now as a millennial, but the really old school felt boards that we used to have in Sunday school. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, it's putting that on the level of a child, and to tell these stories, you know, Noah and the Ark and the Genesis story, all of these things that build a foundation for our faith later. And we need to, as adults, always understand that these aren't just stories and these aren't also just allegories. The pastor started out, and I loved this, where he said, if you're thinking that the sermon title is, you know, six ways to tame the lions in your life, then you're in the wrong church, because that's not the purpose of the text, right? We sometimes then will take that and analogize it totally out of context and then make it more of a life coach kind of story. And that wasn't the purpose. And the entire purpose of this text is the history and how God showed himself to be faithful in the midst of Daniel, who had been carried off to Babylon, and who then was part of the Medes and Persian empire that arose after Babylon. He had grown in favor and in government, in his civil government in that day. And he was one of the main advisors in that kingdom. And so it starts off in Daniel 6 saying that Daniel had so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And so, of course, people were jealous. And so they laid a trap, basically, and used the law of the Medes and Persians to have King Darius put out an edict to basically say, out of all of the kingdom, the king is the only mediator. You have to pray to the king only. And of course, Daniel, who worshiped the true God, was unwilling to do that. And so, you know, we don't have as much time as we did on Sunday morning to go through this whole thing that the pastor was teaching about. But eventually, and we all know the story, that the king couldn't repeal his own law. And he saw the trap after the fact. And even though he loved Daniel, he had to punish him and the consequence of the law by throwing him into the lion's den. And now, you know, think about this, because this is this is one of the worst possible circumstances of someone who has grown in favor, who was in a foreign land, still worshiping the Lord, but he was doing everything right. He was actually not guilty of anything that was worthy of consequence, and certainly not punishment by death. But then here he is, and he chooses ahead of this ridiculous law that he is going to continue to be faithful to God. And so as God's faithful man, he displayed the attributes of being first totally trustworthy, which we see in the introduction in verse 6. He was doggedly devoted to God and truth in action, not just in word. And I love how the pastor said doggedly devoted, because a lot of you know Todd and Copper, my two dogs. And that phrase, doggedly devoted, means so much more to you if you've ever owned a dog who just absolutely loves you. I mean, you can't go anywhere. I can't take a bubble bath at night without both of my dogs just sitting there, very concerned, watching everything. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, whether I'm out on the porch, whether I'm cooking dinner, whether I'm in my bubble bath, whatever I'm doing, they just want to be there and be involved, because their entire life consists over what their master is doing. And that type of dogged devotion to God means that we are slaves to Christ. We are devoted in action. And Daniel was unfailingly faithful, and he had an unyielding commitment to the truth. And those are all great attributes. But because he ran afoul of civil government's law, there was a real cost. And that real cost looked to everyone, including the king, and probably including him, even though we don't have in the text what his response was after he responded by praying to God, as he had been doing every day before. We don't have any record of whether he was crying out to God to save him, whether he was firmly committed of just, okay, I'm going to go to my death and be with the Lord. We don't know. But it was a real cost, and he was facing imminent death in one of the worst possible ways. And the text, and here was the point that really resonated with me. The text doesn't guarantee rescue, but it does guarantee that God is always with you, because God is faithful. And we all go through horrible circumstances. We go through trials. We go through difficulties, unexpected things. I've gone through a lot of unexpected things. And because we know and we've grown up with the end of the story, sometimes we expect that God will rescue us just as dramatically as he did in Daniel. But there are other people throughout history, and the pastor went through a few, and we see that even in the Essential Church movie, that there have been martyrs for the faith. There have been people who have paid a very steep cost. I mean, even looking back at COVID, people lost their jobs because they were unwilling as a matter of principle and in an action for their faith, refusing to yield. And there is a very real cost. And so it may not be that God rescues you yet, and he still could, from your circumstances. He will give you a way to act Christianly. There is always a way to please God or not, no matter the circumstances. But the text doesn't guarantee rescue necessarily, but that God is with you in all things. And that is man's faithful God. So the three attributes of God, and that we see through this history in Daniel, is that he is perfectly powerful. He's unlimited and not able to be bound. So why should we fear? We should live in his sovereignty. Because politicians, kings, their laws come and go. No matter the outcome of the November election, we may be very concerned, and rightly so, about America. But if our faith and our hope is in this nation instead of in God, then we are misplacing our faith in a country and the blessings of liberty instead of he who is the one who gives us the liberty to begin with. God is perfectly powerful. He is absolutely eternal. God reigns forever. Kings and kingdoms will all pass away, as the song says, but there's something about that name. God reigns forever. So why should we worry? Live in his sovereignty. And if God were perfectly powerful and absolutely eternal, but not involved in our day-to-day circumstances, then we wouldn't see it as much in terms of a relationship. But God, the third attribute here, is intimately involved. If he was just powerful and eternal but indifferent to us, then what good would that necessarily be to us? So while everyone else is worrying and fearing and has all this anxiety, we can have fellowship with God, because what ultimately happened to Daniel is that the worst circumstance, what was intended to be his death in that lion's den, ended up with what theologians would call a theophany, or the manifestation of the person of Jesus before he came incarnate. And so Daniel communed with God in the lion's den. So this entire moment that was supposed to be the worst possible trial and consequence of him being obedient to God ended up being the sweetest communion with the Lord that he had had in his life, even more than his obedience when he was praying every day and openly, and when he was obedient to God, he had been faithful for all of his life. And that moment, the worst trial of his life, was the best communing with the Lord. So again, God does not guarantee rescue, but he does guarantee that he is with you because he's faithful. And I can attest to that he's been faithful in all of the things that I've been through.
Every moment of difficulty, God has been with me, and he was last week. And he will continue to be, because he is faithful. And that gave me such a peace in walking through the next step and the next thing, to just continue to tell the truth, continue to follow the Lord. And again, I so appreciate your prayers. And this has been a truly amazing opportunity to learn about God's faithfulness. And so we're going to take a break here, and I know that Riley Wildman is standing by, and we're going to have her on to talk about the AF8 Foundation right after the break. But I just wanted to say, in coming back, thank you all so much for your prayers and your encouragement. And you can always reach me, jenna@afr.net. And some of you have asked if you can also support, and you still can. My lawyers still have
that GiveSendGo that is open. It's givesendgo.com/support Jenna. givesendgo.com/support Jenna. And that all goes to all the legal fees. But, you know, whatever trial you're in, whether it's something like mine or it's something different, God is faithful and he will be faithful to the end of the age. We'll be right back.
I'm Jan Harper.
And I'm Bert.
If you're a pastor's wife, you know both the blessings and the unique challenges that come with the life you and your husband live daily. We call it living in the fishbowl.
The 2024 Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming October 22nd through 24th. This year's retreat will be at Pickwick Landing State Park in Counts, Tennessee. As always, the Fishbowl Retreat is hosted by Pastor Bert Harper of American Family Radio and his wife Jan. Our special speaker will be Dr. Ray Pritchard, co-host of today's issues on AFR, and his wife, Marlene. Registration is open now and space is limited. Your registration fee of $400 per couple covers lodging, meals, and materials. Come get some much-needed encouragement at the Fishbowl Retreat. Learn more and register at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat. We'd love to see you there.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of giving and helping others leave a legacy through your gift, let's talk about the AFA Foundation and the incredible work that you can help us with to build a lasting legacy through the ministry here at AFA. And so let's welcome in Riley Wildman, who is the director of the AFA Foundation. Good morning, Riley, and tell us all about it.
Yes, good morning, Jenna. Thank you so much for having me. And I got to listen, just I wanted to tell you real briefly before the break, I got to listen to your heart and everything. And I just want to tell you that we all are continuing to pray for you and everything that you're going through and trials. And I just want to tell you, I appreciate your encouragement real quick on that. But I do want to give your list. Yes, ma'am. I do want to give your listeners kind of a brief overview of the AFA Foundation. And again, I appreciate you having me on today. But the foundation is just exists to help individuals and families leave a legacy through different tools that we have. One of those tools is a charitable gift annuity. And that is just a simple contract, Jenna, between American Family Association and American Family Radio for people to give a minimal amount of $2,000 or anything above that to the ministry. And in return, Jenna, they receive a permanent income coming back to them for the rest of their life, as well as receive a partial tax deduction. So that is just a great tool that we have in the foundation for people to leave a gift to the ministry, also receiving income coming back to them while they're living. But when they pass away, anything left over is a gift back to American Family Association.
And that's such a great and smart way to support AFA and invest for the future. And so there are a couple of other ways as well that you can support the AFA Foundation.
Yes, there is. There's a few other ones, a stock donation where people can just give an outright gift of stock to the ministry and receive a full 100% tax deduction when they give just an outright gift of stock. Or, Jenna, they can also use the stock donation for a charitable gift annuity. And how that works is they would give the stock to American Family Association, and then in return, once we sell the stock, we use that stock, those funds, to fund the charitable gift annuity. So you can do it by way of cash or stock or just an outright gift. And then the other thing is what we call a will, where people can leave American Family Association in their will. So those are two or three tools that we have that can support the ministry and can do the mission of American Family Association.
I'm speaking with Riley Wildman, who is the the director of the AFA Foundation about how you can help leave a legacy and support the ministry of the American Family Association through charitable gift annuities to benefit AFA. You can go to the website. It is afafoundation.net, afafoundation.net, and learn about all of these different options, or you can email foundation@afa.net. That's foundation@afa.net. And, you know, there's so many, especially in a political election year, Riley, there are so many different organizations and campaigns and everything that is asking for donations and people's gifts. And, and I just want to say, you know, I know that the AFR family and the AFA family wants to do the work of Christ through our giving. And in fact, we are called as Christians to give to our local church, to give to ministry, and to be good stewards of all of the blessings that God has given us. And that includes our income, but it includes everything in our lives. Yeah. And one of the great things that is so much more long lasting than a political campaign is that it doesn't matter what the outcome is in November for any of these things. And there are, you know, great campaigns that everyone can donate to as well. But this is truly, this ministry exists specifically to promote the truth of the gospel of Christ. And the reason that I love being here is because we can speak the truth of the Lord every day, tie that to news of the day, current events, all of these things. But at the end of the day, our mission is to encourage Christians, equip Christians with how to live Christianly. And for those who maybe are listening and are not Christians, come to know God as their Lord and Savior. And so this type of gift is wonderful, and I would really encourage everyone who's listening to consider contacting the AFA Foundation. So it's foundation@afa.net, and you can go to the website afafoundation.net. So Riley, any closing thoughts on the AFA Foundation, and thanks so much for joining this morning.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And again, they can also go to our phone number is 800-326-4543. Again, 800-326-4543, extension 345, and we'll be glad to run any illustrations. Thank you
wonderful.
So much, Jenna.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. And it was great to see you at the AFA retreat a couple of months ago. Great. And get to meet so many wonderful people, too, who are AFR listeners. So let's go to some of that news of the day that we talk about from a biblical worldview. And you may have heard that the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in yet another masterpiece cake shop case. This is one. The history of this is just so intentionally targeting Christians, it's brinking on utterly absurd. So this person who's actually a lawyer in Colorado, who is a trans woman, so a biological male, and says that, you know, he's a woman, went to Masterpiece the day that the Supreme Court handed down the prior Masterpiece cake shop case in 2018, when Jack Phillips, who was the owner of Masterpiece, won a victory 7-2 in the U.S. Supreme Court on that initial case, which, of course, was the homosexual couple that asked him to bake a cake for their quote-unquote gay wedding. Of course, we know that it's not a marriage, that it doesn't work like that biblically. And he won that case, but then has consistently now been in yet another trial. And instead of just doing the work that God has for him, he is continuing to fight. And so this trans person went into his cake shop and asked for a cake that was pink inside and then blue frosting. And initially they said, okay, sure. But then specifically told, and I think it was Jack's wife actually that was taking this order, if I remember the facts correctly, and said, well, this is to celebrate my gender transition. So of course, Masterpiece declined to bake that cake for that type of event. And now it's back in the Supreme Court, and he's been represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom. But we have Mike Donnelly, who is a good friend of the show, and he is a professor of law and also an attorney. And Mike, you know, this is just utterly ridiculous. And I hope that the U.S. Supreme Court just utterly slams the Rainbow Mafia on this and says, no, of course, a baker has the right to decline goods and services and not enter into and using his creative skills and talents for anything that his conscience objects to.
Good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you also. And this is in the Colorado Supreme Court right now. It may make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. If the Colorado Supreme Court does not rule in Jack's favor, I'm sure it will. I'm sure either way, there probably will be.
Thanks. Yes, I misspoke.
On both sides.
Colorado. Yes,
no,
Colorado Supreme Court.
You said Supreme Court. No, you said Supreme Court. I mean, whatever.
But I didn't clarify, so thank you for that. Yes.
Yeah, whatever. It may make its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. In fact, it probably will. This is a case where the facts may matter. It's interesting. You do have the facts pretty much correct, although what they're arguing is that they didn't say why they wanted it until after the cake shop said they would bake it. And then they came in and they said, hey, this is for my gender transition. And then that's when Jack said no. And then this attorney who was involved in previous harassment of Jack Phillips went to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Now, this is interesting. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission settled. And they said, look, we're going to fine you $500, Jack. And Jack's like, okay, I'll pay it. And he tried to pay it. But this attorney said, no, not good enough for me. We want an admission of guilt. And that's what these folks want, right? They want people to say that what they're doing is acceptable. And that's what this is all about. And Jack said, no, I can't say that. I can't admit to guilt here. And so this attorney used the due process that's in the Colorado Civil Rights Act up to appeal the decision by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. You'll remember Masterpiece Cake Shops, Justice Kennedy wrote the majority opinion. And he basically said, look, the Colorado Commission in Jack's case back in 2018 they exhibited animus towards Jack's religion, and that's unacceptable. And that was the main reason why Jack was able to win. In this case, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission settled, and now the courts in Colorado have sided with this attorney, and now the Colorado Supreme Court is going to have to make a decision, and it's going to be interesting.
Wow. And that is such a key piece of information as well, that it was intentional, obviously, that this trans woman, you know, wanted this specific type of cake, did not disclose that this was for a gender transition celebration until after he had agreed to bake the cake, which you know, you would never have to think as a baker, okay, how exactly are you going to use this design? What is this for? And go through all of this. We shouldn't have to do that as Christians. And the fact as well that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which you and I, Mike, have talked for years about how much of a modern day star chamber that really is, this commission, that they had agreed to just have him pay $500 and go in. And yet, so this attorney is appealing, saying this wasn't star chamber enough. And so I'm going to appeal because I want an admission of guilt. I want to condemn the Christians, basically. And so with this being at the Colorado Supreme Court, and likely, you know, as you mentioned, it'll at least get appealed, whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court accepts it. But, you know, whoever loses in Colorado. But given the composition of the Colorado Supreme Court, and listeners will remember, I mean, this is the same Colorado Supreme Court that had said that Trump should be removed from the ballot, which was a very politically motivated decision, not grounded in law, and was ultimately reversed. Are they likely, do you think, to see this as political and they don't want to get reversed again? Or, you know, what can we possibly expect from the outcome?
Oh, I'm not surprised. I will not be surprised if Jack loses and then ADF is going to be appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I imagine the Supreme Court would take it, you know, yet again, let's clarify what does it mean to have the freedom to speak and, creative expression. And, you know, also, I think it's important that this was a setup. You know, there are any number of other cake providers that could provide this person with the cake that they want to celebrate whatever they want. And they chose specifically to set Jack Phillips up with the intent to get him to admit that he's wrong, right? And so it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure how the U.S. Supreme Court would handle it. I haven't been following this case extremely closely, but it is interesting. And it's really unfortunate that we have to be having this conversation, you know, and I'll, and, you know, maybe we can talk about federalism a little bit. You know, I love to talk about federalism, you know.
Yes, you do.
This is one of those cases where the U.S. Supreme Court is applying the First Amendment, and there's a case that we may talk about later today or something about the Louisiana legislature saying we're going to put 10 commandments into every school classroom. What does that have to do with the cake shop? Well, it's about the First Amendment and whether it applies to the states and how it applies to the states. And in one case, it's freedom of religion and freedom of expression also, right? You know, Congress not regulating what we say or how we express our beliefs. Now, on the other hand, Congress, you know, as the First Amendment says, Congress shall pass no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. You know, so in the Louisiana case, I think we're going to find some lawsuits where people are going to be like, you can't put the Ten Commandments in the classrooms. That's establishment of religion. And the Supreme Court is grappling with and going to have to continue to grapple with this question of religion and what the states can and can't do under the First Amendment. And it's not just in the case of Jack. It's not just in the case of Louisiana. It's also potentially in the case of charter schools in Oklahoma. So, you know, we are in a very interesting time in Supreme Court jurisprudence since the court has essentially let go of the Lemon Test, which is the test they had used to determine whether a law established religion. And they used it to strike down all kinds of things. By the way, including in 1980 in Stone v. Graham in Kentucky, they struck down a law using the Lemon Test in a per curiam decision in Kentucky, where the Kentucky law required 10 commandments to be posted in every public school classroom in Kentucky. And the Supreme Court in 1980 said that violated the Establishment Clause. Well, here we are. Louisiana is setting up a situation where the court may have to overturn their 1980 decision or clarify it somehow. So very interesting things happening at the Supreme Court with respect to religion, with speech, with expression.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Mike Donnelly. Yeah, and this is very good, and it's a good thing that the Lemon Test was basically overturned, and that's fallen out of favor, because as you said, you know, that was used to strike down a lot of things that that were not actually an establishment of religion in the actual sense, and you know that has been morphed into a way that that the federal government can control expression of things that are just completely fine. I mean, you know, if Louisiana, I mean, the bottom line is under our federalist system, if Louisiana wants and their elected representatives want the Ten Commandments to be posted in every public school classroom, does that violate the U.S. Constitution?
I don't think it does. I don't think it violates the intent of the Constitution. You know, the opponents are going to argue that it will, but they're losing that argument now as the court is saying, look, we are originalists. The Constitution means something. The words mean something. And if we want to change it, there is a way to change it. And, you know, you can amend the Constitution. But we've got to get back to that kind of due process and rule of law, where you don't get to change the Constitution just by changing what you mean by the words in the Constitution or how words are used, which is what's happening now in our culture with this, you know, strategy of linguistic infiltration. We're going to change the meaning of a man to mean woman, depending on the person's own perceived, perception of who they want to be or who they want other people to think them to be, right? So it's like, look, words have meaning. Let's keep the words. And if you don't like it, let's have a conversation about whether that's good or not. But stop changing the meaning of words and trying to get your way by changing the definition of the word.
Right. And this is how the left is consistently trying purposefully to redefine reality and to force us to use their terms. And this all falls under the bigger banner of queer theory, which is to say that nothing is self-evident truth anymore. It's just what the experts tell us reality is. And so it doesn't matter whether it's biologically observable fact that a male is a male and a female is a female, the experts have to tell us. So whatever your gender was, quote unquote, assigned at birth, that didn't matter to them, right? And they want us to participate in that. And that's what the Masterpiece Cake Shop case is all about. It's not really to them about our religious belief. It's about the fact that they can't control our speech that does not, and are declining to be compelled into their linguistic alternative definition of reality and our rejection of their utter lunacy. But Mike Donnelly, thanks so much. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June marks 2 years since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, but did you know that the number of abortions actually increased in the following year? In 2023, the amount of abortions reached its highest level since 2012. Preborn continues to stand strong for women in crisis. Preborn is a ministry of compassion that showers women and babies with God's love, providing free ultrasounds to mothers to introduce them to the precious life growing inside of them. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Your generous tax-deductible donation will also help to provide women who choose life with assistance for up to 2 years. So please give your best gift. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of the left trying to reinvent reality and use their so-called science, this article actually came from the Scientific American and called for federal homeschooling regulation. So today in science, homeschool rules. In 2019, nearly 3% of U.S. children, 1.5 million, were being homeschooled. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, the number has been growing in recent decades, and the true number is likely much higher, especially since more kids started homeschooling during the COVID pandemic. And so, according to this article, why it matters is that homeschool children have gone on to win national spelling bees, oh no, but most states don't require the same assessment of homeschool kids that are required for their public school peers. Parents are not required to have an education themselves to direct instruction. And in most states, no one checks to see that children are receiving an education at all. In the worst cases, homeschooling can hide abuse. So they argue that what can be done is that homeschooling should be subject to some basic federal mandates. So joining me now to say absolutely no with this type of homeschooling oversight, which has kind of been a push from the left for a while, and homeschoolers and the whole movement has pushed back largely. But joining me now to discuss is Corey DeAngelis, who is the author of The Parent Revolution. And Corey, you know, this has been a push for a while, and I think that the left is seeing that one of the unintended consequences of their COVID rhetoric and the lockdowns that largely the left mandated resulted in a lot of families being forced to try out homeschooling. And guess what? Parents actually like spending time with their kids, and they see that homeschooling isn't nearly as difficult as they had been led to think. And so more and more parents, I think the statistic is somewhere over that homeschooling has grown over 400% just since COVID. And so the left now doesn't get to indoctrinate kids. Oh, no.
Yeah, look, the government school monopoly played stupid games, and now they win stupid prizes as well. They're losing control over the minds of other people's children, and that's the big issue here. The homeschooling is fine. They're doing a good job, and parents have figured out that they could learn more at a fraction of the time, and their kids are happier, they're less anxious, and it's a better environment than the factory model government-run school system. And the teachers union monopoly, yeah, they have a monopoly on money, but they also have a monopoly on the minds of other people's children. but no more. And they're calling for federal regulations of homeschooling because of it. And they won't be able to indoctrinate kids in their leftist socialist worldview anymore. And that's the big problem here. First of all, the federal homeschool regulations would be unconstitutional, but it's just ridiculous. They should rename this journal or magazine Unscientific and Un-American. I mean, their name is parody at this point. And they call for background checks that are required to homeschool. I mean, in other words, to raise your own children. They're calling for the government to get involved and for parents to prove their innocence. That is a Fourth Amendment violation, and it's against a whole lot of Supreme Court precedent. And even going back to 1925, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, where the court famously ruled that the child is not the mere creature of the state. Those are some wise words, and parents and authoritarians should listen to those wise words today. I'm looking at you, Joe Biden, who tweeted out that there's no such thing as other people's kids. They're society's kids. It reminds me of Hillary Clinton's "It Takes a Village."
Yeah, and it's really scary, Corey, to think about exactly what you just said, that parents would have to prove their fitness in order to raise their own children and to direct their education, which is a basic parental right that is protected through the Constitution, because we give government no power by which to either foreclose that right or to test parents for them to prove their fitness. I mean, it's the same concept, different application, but the same concept as the what's wrong with red flag laws, for example, that you should not have to prove to the government your fitness to exercise one of your rights. Only after you have violated a law that is valid and the government has proven by the standard of proof necessary in court, then they can perhaps foreclose some of your rights, but we shouldn't have to prove our fitness as parents.
Yeah, and look, just imagine, where does this end? I mean, they could make the same argument that some parents might not feed their kids correctly, so we got to have the government come and sit at dinner with you every night. No, absolutely not. You don't have to prove your innocence. You're innocent until proven guilty in this country. And do they bring that same energy to the government school system? Absolutely not. I mean, Baltimore, they have 40% of their high schools have 0% math proficiency rates. What do? There, they say, we got to reward that system, give them more money because they're failing. It's a total joke. It's a clown show. And those regulations haven't led to the stellar academic results in the government school system. They also hint that some parents might abuse their kids. Well, look at the Department of Education's own report has found that 1 in 10 kids will experience educator sexual misconduct by the time they reach 12th grade. That's just from the educators themselves. I mean, that doesn't even include other children where they could experience that kind of misconduct as well, and bullying and on and on and on. The problem isn't with the homeschoolers. The problem is in their own backyard when it comes to the government school system. They should focus their energies elsewhere.
Yeah. And meanwhile, parents should, of course, fight back, because you're absolutely right that not only is this itself a very important issue in and of itself, but if we step back and say, you know, OK, fine, you know, what does it matter? We'll pass the background check anyway, or, you know, some of those things. It's just giving basically license to a slippery slope that how could the government weaponize this further? I mean, I could see, for example, in the aftermath of all of the COVID nonsense, to say, OK, well, we don't trust parents anymore to determine health care for their children. So we are going to regulate it and mandate certain things for every child, and parents have no ability to opt out or decide for themselves. I mean, all of these things then become government control instead of genuine liberty. And so what can parents do to stand up against this type of thing if it ends up that there is some type of push for a federal mandate for homeschooling?
Yeah, fight back and say no every step of the way. Don't let them do it. It shouldn't. I would hope it wouldn't have to come to the courts. I don't think this would have any legs when it comes to legislation, because look, homeschoolers band together already and they fight against federal government authoritarian overreach. So I would say you're most powerful when you're in groups. So if you have more people, a broader coalition to fight back whenever there's these calls for regulation, I think you have a better chance of winning. I'm on the board of Liberty Justice Center, so we would be interested in defending parents in this kind of overreach. So if that ever happened, I don't think it has any chance of happening soon. But look, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. We got to watch out every step of the way, even if we think the likelihood of these things happening is pretty low. And I would say, as I document in The Parent Revolution, my new book, the best chance you have against these types of regulations and overreach would be to advance school choice policies. If you have more people benefiting from private and home education, look, the government and Scientific American, which that's such a ridiculous name for them at this point, they're calling for regulations even without school choice. And so, look, the government can already regulate private and home education without the funding following the child. The best chance you have against that is by having more people benefiting, having a broader coalition. And so, look, places like New York, they already have ridiculous homeschooling regulations where you have to take the standardized test and do a better job than the kids in the public schools to even raise your own kids. I mean, it makes no sense at all. And they're doing this without any school choice programs. And so you might as well take the W while you can. You might as well advance the policy and allow more people to homeschool so that if the government actually tries to tie strings to the funding or tries to come and take your right to raise your own kid away, you'll have more people to say hell no.
Yeah. And it is really true that in groups, I mean, almost like why unions, and we can talk about how, you know, the school union is terrible and all that, but the original idea of a union was that there is power in numbers and that the, you know, the little worker himself may not be able to go against the big bad corporation, but together we might be able to have representation. And this is where there are a lot of homeschooling groups that are, you know, very prolifically active in this. And, you know, you mentioned your organization as well that you're on the board of, Corey. And I'm speaking with Corey DeAngelis, who's the author of The Parent Revolution, a brand new book that is excellent, talking about all of these issues. And parents, if you're not involved, you need to be involved. And even if you are not a parent, you're a grandparent, you're an aunt, like me, my nephews and niece are homeschooled, and I want to protect that right for my brother and his wife to make sure that they can continue to exercise that right. And we need to be aware of what's going on in our local states and communities, as well as on the national level. So in the last few minutes, Corey, how could this potentially change on the federal level if the Republicans lose the House majority and you know, continue to not be in the majority in the Senate after November?
Yeah, well, let's hope the Republicans win, and let's hope Trump wins, because he's a supporter of school choice and he's against homeschooling regulations. So, look, I'm the eternal optimist. I say we win the White House and fight back against these attempts by Democrats to subvert the will of parents. But yeah, the Democrats are a wholly owned subsidiary of the teachers union, so they're going to fight against any type of opportunities for parents to leave the status quo. So they fight against school choice every step of the way. These are the elitists who think that parents shouldn't have a right to direct the upbringing of their children. So that's where the risk comes into play. If the Democrats control both chambers at the federal level, and if Joe Biden wins re-election, or if someone else gets put in there on the Democrat side, that would be a huge problem. So, look, that's where I think it would have to come to the courts to protect us from that. And maybe there's not even enough Democrats to coalesce to actually call for federal regulations of homeschooling. But another thing in that Scientific American post was that they were upset that parents were homeschooling for religious reasons, which gets into another can of worms, that this could be a 14th Amendment infringement. They're just violating the rights of religious people to educate their own kids as well. So this seems to be rooted in anti-religious bigotry at the same time. It's a lot of mess. It's all about these control freaks that know they're losing their grip. They're losing their stranglehold right now, because, I mean, just yesterday, Louisiana became the 12th state to pass universal school choice. We're winning on this issue. And so even if we lose ground federally, look, the education isn't even in the Constitution. We should have no right. Department of Education. The Republicans, if they win, hopefully they can abolish that unconstitutional institution. Trump said he would pick a libertarian to be a cabinet member. If he wants to check that box, he can put me in, coach, and I'll fire myself on the first day, and we can get rid of the Department of Education. But
sounds like a plan, Corey. We need to get you in there, and I couldn't agree more because as you said, education is not a subject matter that is given to the federal Congress to legislate over. So it is constitutionally a state issue, and states are supporting parents. And that is so incredibly important. So you can follow Corey DeAngelis. He's at DeAngelis Corey on X and tweets prolifically on things that you need to know. There's also a system called The Lookout, which is just another organization that have alerts on parental rights concerns. I posted that on my X feed as well as for Jenna Ellis in the morning. You can click on that link, sign up for free. You'll get text alerts. They're not a lot. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net, and make it a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.